You're listening to the Adoption and Fostering Podcast from Misadventures of an Adoptive Dad.
Hello and welcome to the 20th episode of the Fostering and Adoption Podcast. Now, this week's a little bit different.
Is it not Adoption and Fostering Podcast? Or have you just changed it just because it's 20th?
Okay.
No, I was just, you know, I'm just saying. Or are we trying to, you know, reach out?
That's a big sigh. Well, hello and welcome to the 20th episode of the Adoption and Fostering Podcast. And this week's a bit unusual in that I've got two guests and we're actually in person with the guest. Well, I haven't got a contributor. You're not a guest, are you? I've got Scott.
Hello, thank
Scott.
You. Yeah. Oh, thank you for that. I'm not quite a guest. I haven't been on everyone.
That's true. You are, but you're not really. You are a contributor.
I am a contributor.
Yeah. In every sense.
A volunteer contributor. I don't get paid the same as you, do I?
No, nowhere near the same as me. But we also have got someone very special as well.
We have.
Haven't we? We've got the good Mrs. C. She's formerly known. Hello, Paula.
Hi.
Hello, precious lamb. How are you doing?
Good.
He's punching above his weight.
Well, thanks a bunch. It's a bit unusual today because we're actually all together in a room and very rarely we've recorded a podcast where we've all been together. So that's actually technologically much simpler for me because we've got the blue snowball, which is my...
I've tweeted a photograph of the blue snowball.
Excellent, yeah. Which is the all-hearing ear.
It does look like, though. It's like a Big Brother camera, actually, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what it looks like.
It's quite sinister.
Yeah.
So, this is a bit unusual. As I've said, it's an unusual podcast. And I was just wanting to kind of draw a line and maybe have a little chat to Paul and see what Paul's thoughts on the podcast are. Tell me what you think about me. No, don't tell me what you think about me. That's an act of madness. Right, we've had a really good run of the podcast, haven't we, now?
I think.
20 episodes, and we've talked about all kinds of topics, haven't we?
Yeah.
And I know, Paul, you haven't listened to as many as I would expect in good life.
Because I'm too busy looking after your children.
While you're recording podcasts.
Yeah.
Right. I think we're setting a clear tone about where we're going with this, aren't we?
Try not to, sorry.
Well, so, Scott, you've been away. I know you're very busy, so tell me, how are you? Tell me any of your news you've got. A minute. News, how are you doing?
A minute? God, my life in a minute. No, that's impossible. It has been really busy, but it's all good. We're now going into summer, where things get quieter. Work.
Yeah.
Because obviously a lot of holidays in children's services and other adoption agencies and what have you. But that means we get to do other stuff.
That's good.
So we catch up.
It's also been an unusual time in that all the Department for Education stuff that you've been doing they've all gone to sleep, haven't they? We've been in Purda.
We have, yes. We've been in Purda, so they've all kind of, I don't know, have they actually been working? I'm assuming they have.
Well, I heard that they just rearranged their desk for six weeks.
Well, they rearranged someone's desk.
Yeah. Oh.
Did I say that out loud?
Oh, yeah. Goodbye, Mr. Timson.
Well, it must be quite difficult for them, actually, because they've now got a new boss, haven't they?
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to... Yeah.
The people I've spoken to have said it's been quite frustrating because they had plans and they were on a programme and they were they're in a 5-year cycle.
Yeah.
And so actually to have that all shifted and that level of uncertainty thrown into the middle of it all. So the things around adoption support fund, around all regionalisation agenda, that was all sort of literally no one can do anything. And I spoke to a few people and they were saying it's been really frustrating because they had meetings lined up and they were going to move on, but it's all stopped.
Yeah.
But now we're
getting back into it, aren't we?
I think there were summer hits.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously, the minister won't stop work, but the government goes and... So the
power naps.
Yeah, they have their little break, don't they? Their summer break. But I'm sure they're still working behind the scenes.
Yeah, probably are.
And I'm sure the civil servants that you and I both deal with
are still
working hard.
Smashing people.
Yeah, they are.
Yes.
Yeah, but I'm sure it'll pick up, and I'm sure September comes... We'll know the priorities of this minister and this, whatever. Are we calling that government? Is that a government?
I think that's what we will be calling it.
Okay.
Yes, so you know all the terms, don't you? I just finger on the pulse.
Well, when they've not got the majority thing, you know. Because I'm not political, as you know. I don't do politics.
If it's ever false too, they're political. You could be a political correspondent for the BBC, I think.
Yeah, I'm not sure my kind of words would be quite appropriate to stand at number 10 in the microphone. No.
Some things are happening and it's dead good. But anyway, what I'm conscious of is I've got my good lady wife here. Beautiful. I'm not going to do all that all the time because it'll be really sick of that.
Like the last podcast we did when we interviewed.
So, Paula, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
It's nice to, for you to join me on the podcast. There's been a few times where there's been a few sort of aborted attempts, hasn't there, where we nearly had you on the podcast. There's a few things that happened. But you have much more experience of adoption than me because you do most of the hard work, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't really know what questions to ask. Maybe you should ask Paul some questions about adoption. About her experience.
About adoption. I was going to ask you some questions about how, because that'd be interesting. Because when we ask him questions, well, when I ask him questions, he's very kind of...
cagey?
Yeah, he pushes himself, you know. So he asks me all the questions, and then at the end of a podcast, I'm thinking, I actually didn't ask him anything tonight, or he's asked me how I am, and I've shared how I am and what I'm doing. So is he like that at home? I know that's not adoption, but it would be nice for our regular listeners to know what he's like.
He is very hardworking, but he can be very grumpy.
Oh,
you've cut me deep.
We don't see that, you see. No. We don't see that in public. He's got a public in it.
Oh, no, I know. He's got a very good public face. He is lovely, though.
Yeah.
I was just going to go down and wash the car. Well, actually, I suppose that some of the questions I was going to ask, I had been thinking about this, and I was thinking about, you've got some interesting perspectives on adoption support, because I know that you've been involved in groups, you've set up your own support groups, you've had social workers in and out of our house, and I guess you're the same. I mean, that's your bread and butter, adoption support, isn't it?
Mm.
And I was just wanting to ask you kind of your thoughts on adoption support, and good stuff, bad stuff, and perhaps, just talk. Because you're great at talking, you're much better than talking.
I think I started very many years ago realising when you've got sort of hard to parent child that you really need support, and the support that you think is there for you, social workers, etc., actually don't give you the support you need, and suddenly you find yourself talking to other parents, and that's the biggest support. And I think that for me in the early days it was really lovely to meet people who knew exactly what I was talking about, didn't judge me, didn't say maybe they're picking up on your anxiety, things like that, which doesn't help, and had kids like mine, and we were able just to sit in a room, not make anything better, but just understand each other, and that's where it all began to happen.
Mm-hmm. I know that you're really active on social media, not so much Twitter, but other areas. Where do you get your support from now?
I think I get my support from friends and people who... understand.
I'm pointing at me.
What is it? Scott. I think things have changed because we used to get together, every 3 or 4 weeks with parents. But I think, it's just actually finding people. And lately I've actually just fallen upon somebody who is a stepmom and, not adopted, but actually is doing an amazing job, and we have had some fantastic talks, and I think being able to really support each other and help each other, and I think I've been able to give her a lot of help in what she's facing, and just to be able to have the information that I've collected over years and years to be able to actually help somebody and think, this is it, and help the kids. There's lots of people out there who, from all different, not just adoption, from everything that you can tap into, and people have either been through some themselves, know somebody. I get emails quite often from people saying, I've adopted from China, Romania, please help me, and things like that. And I think it's just something that the more you go on, you can really see that there's people out there who are getting no help, and then they talk to somebody like me or talk to them, and you suddenly connect with people and think, they get me. And that's the crux of adoption support. Mm-hmm. Somebody gets you.
What about professionals? You can ask questions, Scott, if you want.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, because when we were talking earlier, you were talking about your community that you've got thriving, which involves animals and farms and things like that. And I was really interested to kind of hear about that, because I agree with you. I think that the peer element of, regardless of where it comes from, whether it's something that you've started yourself or something that's done by a local authority even, I think that's the best adoption support that you can get.
Yeah.
It doesn't help with the therapy and stuff, but actually it's... So the community kind of based thing, I mean, Is that just something that's happened, or?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's quite interesting because I've, from being a three-year-old child, I've grown up with horses. My sister had a horse, and I've grown up loving them. And suddenly, a few years ago, bought one, thinking it would help our children. And now I'm on a farm, and I've now got three horses. But what
you collect? Is... You're a collector, aren't you?
I'm a collector. Yes.
Husband,
children,
horses. Expensive hobby, but actually. The sort of farm that I'm on is very child friendly, and I have found so much help for my kids, especially for one who does struggle, actually just being, she's outdoors, she's got animals that she actually loves, she's bonded with a horse, and there are kids sort of like her, and there's rules, and it just really works. And I can see that for us as a family, it's probably really glued us together much more than we've ever been able to do. I'm hoping that she is now nearly 13. I'm hoping that we can get her through the next teenage years in this, because it will save her from a lot of
distractions
yeah. that yeah. she could get into. So outdoors, rules, animals really work for us.
Mm. And links into what, because we spoke to Rachel Staff last week, and she talked about having like other adults around that are a positive influence and happy to correct your children, but also accept them for who they are and accept them for all their slight their peculiarities.
Quirks.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. And that's been, I think, the saving grace, having those adults who will cut our kids some slack, but also tell them that's not acceptable.
Yeah, exactly.
That's been our saving grace.
I think this is the first time in my life that I've ever been able to go somewhere with my, with one particular child and actually not worry and have to make excuses or protect her or explain, where I actually feel really relaxed because she's understood and will be corrected and will enable herself to be corrected because other kids are being corrected, where I've never ever felt the freedom just to enjoy our surroundings and what we're doing together as a family, and the fact that she can go with a sister and not want to kill her is something really special as
that's
well.
That's a positive.
You know, there are some, you know, that it's just brought a lot of positive into our family. It's been right for our family for now, I hope for the future, but right now, today, it works.
Yeah, no, that's good. I like that.
And I think increasingly, the conversations we have are, it works for now.
Yeah.
And whereas in the past, you hope, oh, this is it. We've kind of reached this plateau, and that's it. We've set ourselves much shorter goals in that we think this will get us through the summer, and then we'll see.
Yeah,
might change.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, what we found on the farm we're on, we've got sort of a 16-year-old that's had a really good upbringing, very, very positive influence, good, great role model, an 11-year-old, and you know, younger ones and everything, and they all just get on. There's a little boy there with autism, and they just all get on together. And the
very accepting.
The 16-year-old is very switched on, but really caring, and you know, it's just
positive role models.
Very, very positive role models, and it's showing my children, even my young 5-year-old loves to go. So four of us together are able to all enjoy it together, which I can't imagine there's another thing we could do together as a family that would work.
It's kind of grown, hasn't it? It's something, and it's taken time to get there because we've tried other stuff, haven't we?
Well, that's what I was just going to say, because, you know, you try everything, really, don't you? But when you find that one thing that might actually get you through the next however long, it doesn't matter, even the next week. Yeah, exactly. You kind of try and develop that into something else, don't you? And I think what I was struck by earlier when we were talking was, you know, it started off as a horse, and it's now sprung into this little community. And you know, you were telling me about some other issues that even some non-adopted children have got that come along. That's just, you know, that's just making it normal for everybody, for you, for their parents, and whoever else that comes along. That's that to me is what you need as a support.
I think the challenge though is that's really organic,
yeah,
and it's down I mean, I couldn't do what you do, Paula, because I'm not a person. I'm not a people person. I'm not
really. Oh, sorry.
I think I'm not naturally. You can build communities of people, and that's what we've got as a family. Historically, you've done all of that work, and you can't engineer that. Can you?
No, you can't. And it's true.
Your social worker can come round and give you good advice.
Yeah.
But actually, you need that resilience and that get up and go and that confidence to do that. And often, sometimes I think adopters have had their confidence has
been
totally pulled from them. You know, you perhaps were a really articulate, go-getting person, you adopted and discovered that your world has turned totally upside down. And actually, you need a lot, you know, just to get out the door sometimes takes everything.
But I guess that's the same in every kind of walk of life, isn't it? You know, there are things that are going to knock you. And even, you know, if you look at, I don't know, say someone who's in the armed forces, they suffer something abroad, they come back, they diagnose with PTSD, that can affect them. And even, you know, people with birth children who have these diagnoses as well. It's a similar thing, isn't it? But it's not taken away from the fact that, you know, we're dealing with multiple things rather than just one kind of specific thing.
Yeah. I think it is hard because I think obviously we're involved a lot with adoption support and the stuff we do with DfE, and often some of this is there's a magical alchemy to it.
Yeah.
You know, you can get good support work from social workers. You get, you know, we've had some really good social workers and we've had some other social workers. Yeah, and that's
we've all had them.
Yeah. I don't want to be down with that. I think that you can put in some of those structures, but actually, there's that extra bit. That they leave your social worker.
Yeah,
leaves.
Yeah, and they're not living it, are they? And I always say, you know, excuse me, regardless of what I do for a job, you know, 10 years before I had my job, I was doing exactly what you do. So, well. What you have been doing, so you know, developing kind of little networks of people, you know, helping out in prep courses. I don't know, you know, probably done that, selling panels, all that kind of stuff. You do it as a volunteer because you want to contribute to helping people to understand just how their life might change or will change. Let's face it, you know, but you know, it's kind of you want to try and stay as positive as possible, don't you?
Yeah.
But it kind of for me, there's something about this under. Is underestimation a word?
Might be.
Yeah, I've made it. It's a word. Underestimation from professionals, actually, just what the peer group can provide to each other.
Yeah.
But it's not valued by a number. It's valued by some, but not by everybody.
Yeah.
And there's no kind of, there's no, you know, we've got all these groups. So we've got, you know, Tato Group, and we've got We Are Family, and even Adoption UK, going to that point. You know, they're getting by on very little funding to be able to provide the service. Yeah. And that's where the local bits come in, because actually if it wasn't for them, some people wouldn't be able to, you know, they probably wouldn't exist as a family.
Yeah, so the amount of times
you feel like I've had a rant there and I've got on my soapbox.
It was very nice.
Was it good?
That's I think the amount of times that, and I've been contacted by people, and even Twitter, that community, is that actually I know that on a Sunday night at 10 o'clock, I can get help.
Yeah.
Whereas if I'd phone the duty team, who knows what I'll get? And that's the nature of duty teams. You know, it'll be someone not answering a phone call, and maybe 10 o'clock the next morning, and by then the moment's gone. I needed help then, so it's very instant.
As well, you know, because I'm Facebook more than Twitter.
Yeah.
It's too fast for me. But there's the friendly adopters chat.
Yeah.
And you know that if you just say, like, what a horrible night I've had. You're going to get a load of comments and it just helps you.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're going to read something on that and think, my life was bad.
Yeah, I know.
Do you know what I mean? It just, you know, that in itself, that just hooking into that brings a lot of comfort. It brings a lot of sharing, and you haven't actually met each other, but there's that feeling of you're all rooting for each other.
Yeah.
You know, everybody will just say, feeling for you. You know, you don't even need to write anything. It's just that, and people are there. And I think that's, as adopters, I suppose the professionals, the social workers, the adopter support and all of that, they feel that they've got to come up with answers.
Yeah.
And there's not an answer.
That's right.
There's not an answer to our problems. It's just a matter of someone saying, I'm hearing you.
Mm-hmm.
Come and pour a glass of wine. Relax. You know, whatever. And
pour a liver.
You know, it just... It, you know that these people are just there for you and you're there for them, and it really helps. And that's humanity, isn't it? We need that.
Because we're not always looking for answers, are we? Mm. Sometimes we just want to have a little rant.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's how I feel about it. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Well, that's really interesting, because I think that I find myself in a peculiar position as a social worker, because sometimes I see rants and I feel, ooh, that's... I guess I get a slight professional schizophrenic sort of slip between the two, and I think you've said too much for me to be comfortable.
Yeah.
And so I often ask the people in those groups, are you happy for me to be in? But actually, some of it's not pretty, is it?
No, it's not.
But as a sort, if you say you, but you can never say that to a social worker.
No, I don't think you would.
I think even if you did, they have to answer you professionally, so it's never, you know. So even if you do. They can't, and usually they're a social worker that's never adopted, so you know it's the adoptive parents that, you know, just that I get it.
Yeah.
You know, I feel crap, smiley face, sad face, whatever.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you've got a load of comments saying I'm with you.
Yeah.
I feel like that, you know, and you just it really does help. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't ease the situation. But you know there's people out there who get it.
But that honesty, and I've seen comments on different forums where people say, so-and-so's done this, and I feel this. And then there's a kind of a rant. Yeah, they are rants of like, da-da-da, I've done this, and I'm effing blooming sick of putting up with this. And it's
people, and that's just the husbands and the wives.
Yes, husband and wife. And that's people venting these really raw emotions about how they feel. But that's not. They're still protecting their children, and they still want to go on adopting their children. They're not saying I'll give up.
No, they're not giving up.
But if I went into it as a social worker, if I sat in a room with someone, like, effing has done this, and I'm gonna, and I'd go right. Actually, I can't not ignore that. I can't not ask.
And I think that is something that's born. I think that security to know that you can do that is born out of, you know, years ago when. You used to have the online forums, maybe with Adoption UK, and then after adoption came along, and it's kind of, it's developed from there to be these, because they are generally secret Facebook groups, aren't they? Yeah. So, you know, not everybody can get in, and it's all, you know, and I guess that there are social workers who are adopters like yourself, you know, and, you know, I know that my, all three of my boys' social workers, she actually adopted in the end, not because she wanted to, you know, say, well, I best try this to see what, you know, everybody's raving about. But just because
continual professional development.
Exactly. Yeah, well, maybe something along those lines. But you know, they are there. You know, the same as I work for Adoption UK. But I'm not a qualified social worker.
Yeah.
I'm not a professional. I'm just someone who just so happens to work in that kind of arena and tries to support and develop. But I wouldn't necessarily have the same kind of rants on something public like Twitter. If that makes sense.
Yeah,
it's very different, and I think you need to know you're secure to be able to do that, and you need to know that the people within that group, and you know the name itself, Friendly Adopters Chat, is you know, well done Glitter Nails, another mention for you tonight. Cool, you're doing well. But you know,
I can edit that.
But the fact that, you know, we not necessarily know them as people, but we know them as adopters,
we
know that we're quite safe. Yeah. But we also know, and this is how I feel, that if we're posting stuff like that, that actually the context it's written in is understandable, if that makes sense. Yeah. So if someone like you does come along and says, that's it, you know. But that's how it feels. So I would never put, personally, I would never put a situation on there that I would, you know, damage my family with.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Yeah. I know some people may.
Yeah.
I can confess that I have, on one occasion, I've gone to direct message someone and said, too far.
Right, okay. Well, it wasn't me.
It wasn't you. Yeah. Everyone will be going,
that's right. Yeah.
It wasn't me, if you. At least like three or four people I'm on Facebook. And I did say, I tried to do it as sensitively possible and say, look, actually, I'm not coming as a social worker, I'm not coming as, but actually be mindful that one day your child may see this.
Yeah.
I mean, I always write stuff, I'm really quite honest, but I all the time I'm thinking my daughters, you know, can read this, and actually and is about to go on Facebook at age 13 soon. Yeah. So
she's counting the days down.
But I'm not. But already is she might. I'm not worried about what I'm writing because I know I can explain to her exactly what I mean. Yeah. And I think that that is something we need. We need to sort of be able to filter it through our kids being able to see it. For future,
Definitely.
That's a really interesting point because I think we're really getting the idea. I was listening to Radio 4 because I'm middle class. I was listening to Radio 4 article about our digital footprints because one day we'll be gone and our children might have our passwords.
Yeah. Yeah.
That'll be part of our.
That's always a worry, isn't it?
It is a worry, but you think, actually, you know, like I'll go, when my dad passed, I look through his documents, mm-hmm. his letters, really intimate personal stuff.
Yeah.
When I pass, my children might go, well, let's look through his Facebook account because that's a really, in that you get a really personal lot to my dad. I love it. And to keep a Facebook account going, like Gareth Mars' Twitter feed is still going. He's still kind of tweets really automatically. Peculiar.
Yeah.
So actually, we've got to be mindful that one day our children may rake through, you know, on a bored winter's evening in 2083.
Yeah.
They'll go through and go, what the heck? And reframe how they perceive us.
Yeah.
So I'm always mindful of that.
Yeah.
I mean, I was thinking, because I do have my own little blog, which I don't blog very often, Living Stones. And I often wonder...
Don't come on here plugging your blog. Myself.
We'll edit that.
Yeah, a long time since I don't do it very often. But anyway, but I do wonder what my children, older children, will actually think when they read about... Because I often talk about my own pain and everything like that. And I often think, I hope I'm around in the days where they can look at it.
Makes sense.
And, and sort of see it from my perspective, you know, and what it was like.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I write my blog, but actually I think, I've said this before, you could read my blog and you could not, there's nothing in it. It's tiny. I look at things in such.
There's nothing in it, but he's won Blogger of the Year twice.
Well, not in a sense. Yeah, but I think what I've always tried.
The
amount of times I've had to wash you from his bike.
He hasn't invited me to Blogger of the Year.
No, I noticed that. Yeah, because I was hoping to meet you last year because you won an award last year. Didn't
Should
you?
I go and pick up a tea?
No, but we've got empty glasses. So.
Twice won an award.
Yeah,
and
I was there both times.
Well, I wasn't.
His podcast, Tom's husband, was there.
But my point is this, that there's nothing I write in there that I'm not happy to explain my children. And if very occasionally I will talk about something specifically, and I've talked to Lottie a few times, said, can I talk, are you happy for me to say this? And she'll go,
I totally get that, because I never blog or write about something that will come back and bite me on the backside.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I have to say my children aren't interested in what I've got to say. So, there's that. But there will come a time, perhaps, when they will. And it's there. And there's been a couple of things that I've wanted to blog about that I can't. Because actually it's just
absolutely,
too much to share
publicly.
Can't,
because you can't tell it without telling it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's really difficult. Oh, thank you, Al. I've got like half a glass. I'll have to take a photograph of that. Actually, just to say that the waiter.
Why don't you just leave it here?
This is a really poor podcast.
No, not there. It's not poor, actually. There's
is it?
You can edit this bit, obviously, to Tom Ratchner. But I think this is good. We've gone from adoption sport onto social media onto what we share. That's what tonight is all about.
Natural progression.
Yeah. So, more recently, you know, there's been kind of a couple of, well, there's been three occasions, actually. I've got drafted blogs that I've never posted. They're there, they're written. Mm. But to publish them would make public some really kind of big issues within our family that actually, not that I don't want people to know, because, you know, I've blogged about, exactly. And, you know, my kind of family life, like before adoption and all that sort of stuff. But for this, it's just that little bit too far over that mark to be able to say, you know, because if my children do read it, they'll go, well, that's me. And that's not a very nice thing you said.
Yeah.
When in actual fact, that was how we felt about it as your parents. But it's very difficult to kind of...
Yeah, I mean, it raises the question, why do people blog? And I think that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, I make sense of my world through blogging, and often, like you, my drafts are often a lot longer, and my all my time is editing it down to something shorter. And actually, the writing process is that's where I get my supervision. You know, I write stuff.
Yeah.
The stuff that is vexing me or worrying me or concerning me, I write it, and then I edit it down to something that's palatable or that I'm happy for my kids to read. Because why do people blog?
I think it's interesting because a few years ago I blogged on my living stones. And
oh, she's good. She's good.
But it was when our eldest daughter, who's now 24, she was living in London, and she sent me a message and said, "I've just read your blog," and it made me cry. And it was just feelings of being an adopted mum or something, you know, and stuff I was going through with, you know, particular children. And I thought that's for her, that was a real window into a mum's real deep feelings, you know, because you don't sit and say, "I feel like this."
Yeah.
So she was able to read that and actually think, "Goodness me," you know, and it, you know, she made me cry. And I think it's nice to think that, you know, I think the other two older ones aren't bothered yet, but, you know, she is, and she'll read it. But it's quite good. I would love my mum to have written stuff. Do you mean to have?
It's a window into that.
Yeah, it's, you know, like this, you know, this is me. This is not me writing for someone. This is me. Mm. And they get a picture of how I'm feeling.
Yeah. And I think that's the value in it. I think that's why I really like blogs, because I think that people, you're not necessarily writing for an audience. You're writing for you.
Yeah, you are.
And so you're not telling anything other than what you want to tell. So it's not like I sit and interview someone and say, "Oh, tell me about the time when this happened. Tell me about this." So people are very much like, right now, this is important to me, and I'm going to tell you about it.
I mean, he writes a blog, and I often say, "That's really rubbish." He has said that more than once. 99% of the time I go, "That's really rubbish."
It's funny because we have such supportive partners, don't we?
And he goes, "Well, actually, I've had loads of, like, people come in."
Scott says it's dangerous.
The other night when we were recording the podcast, and at the end we said, I just went to him and said, "Tris, do you download the podcast?" And he went, "Yeah, only because I feel sorry for you." We're so loved, aren't we?
I feel really loved. And I got paid to write something for Community Care. Can I say that? I did say it. And I showed it to Paul. I guess I thought, right, okay, well, sometimes I show them to you just to make sure my spelling's right. And she went, "They paid you for that?" I could have written that. I'll send it anyway.
Mind every good man and all that.
She's turning the cogs in this. That's been a really interesting chat. We went somewhere where it wasn't really expected.
I wasn't expecting to go down that road at all. But that was the whole point of tonight, wasn't it?
Yeah. We're doing something tomorrow, aren't we?
We are, hence the reason we're together.
Yes, we're going on
for one night only.
A little jolly. Well, apart from next week.
Oh, well, yeah, next week.
Anyway.
That's if we make it through tomorrow, actually. That'd be egged.
Flattened and
egged. Fruit.
There'll be some Twitterati on there.
Hopefully
so,
yeah. Hopefully there will be a
bit of Twitterati. But to my mind, the whole thing around the child parent violence is that we're rolling a really big rock up a hill.
Yeah.
And the more people that help, that's good. And so even just doing, we've got like an hour slot, give or take, a morning slot.
We're keynote speakers tomorrow.
Are we?
Yes.
What does that actually mean?
I don't know.
No.
I think that means we're quite important to the conference.
Yeah.
I think. It's interesting because it was, you know, hashtag what's Hugh up to now? He should have been doing it. On domestic violence.
Yeah.
And because he retired, I was allocated a task. And actually, in fairness to Hugh, he got on the back of the CPP thing.
He did, absolutely.
And he said, "Scott, I want you to do this. Can you please ask Al to do it with you, just in case you make a muck up of this?"
Yeah, he clearly knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It'll be good, and it'll...
I'm seeing the CPV, the initials everywhere, and I'm really pleased about that. Mm. Initially, you kind of think, they're talking about it. And you go, actually, I don't care who's talking about it. As long as we're not saying abstract, ridiculous things, we're pushing this boulder up the hill, and if everyone pushes, that actually it reaches a tipping point where actually it becomes an accepted
norm. Yeah.
Similarly to the stuff around education, you know, 5 years ago, there was one voice going, education's rubbish for adopted kids. Now it's universally accepted.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's interesting what we were talking about earlier, and I'm not saying that the podcast is the catalyst for all these sort of things, but what I am going to say is that I think that's the one thing that I've learned from the podcast is that we can address things when they're not happening for some people. So they're actually, their awareness is kind of there about things like that. So whether it's adoption support or whether it's CPV or whether it's, I don't know, the other things, teenagers, because everybody's going to have a teenager eventually, aren't they?
Yeah.
So to bring that awareness kind of into people's heads to think about, rather than when it happens going, oh my God, where did that come from?
Yeah.
And that's, to me, that's a CPV thing.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, one of my frustrations, and I think that hinted at is we never really get to the bottom of anything.
No.
So I have wondered whether we should reduce our topics down to kind of micro topics and really address issues, which might, some people might find helpful. But even we talked to Marie about trauma.
Yeah.
Really popular. People really interested. Mm. And stuff that I guess because we're in this world, we take for granted that people are getting access to those resources. Actually, people are not. They mustn't be.
No.
And if we can say, hey, here's someone who knows what to talk about, follow them on Twitter, and we'll eventually point you in the right direction. Read these books. And so we kind of, in some ways, we're just a signpost. Hey, there's this stuff. Hey, there's this stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
This might be in the future.
And it's interesting because we've been obviously promoting the next week's event, which is with We Are Family in London.
Yeah, really.
2 weeks in a trot, I've got to speak with him. Anyway, so I've been promoting that a bit over the last couple of days, and it's been interesting because there's people popping up saying, I can't get to London, when are you coming to?
Yeah.
And I think we need to make clear that this is actually nothing to do with Adoption UK, it's nothing to do with your work, it's nothing to do with my work. This is stuff that we're doing for free because we feel that well, it's free. I'm doing it for free. I've been paid, obviously.
Getting your share.
But we are doing it for free, and we would. I mean, I would love to, like you. I'd love to be able to just go anywhere where people want to hear about it and to be able to talk about it. But on the other side of that, you know, there's a little bit like Paula was saying earlier. You know, there's all little groups that have set up everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Make us an offer. If you're going to pay our expenses, then we'll be there.
I think the trap parent violence thing is very interesting. If I heard of this when my now nearly 13-year-old daughter was 4 or 5, if I'd heard this, it would have saved my life.
Mm.
You know, because you don't talk about it. You know, you can, you know, and you sit with a social worker, this is what's happening, I'm being bitten, hit, headbutted, and they go, you know, and all of this. And I think that it's just, for me, it's got to be out there.
Yeah.
It's got to be out there. So so people like me, years ago, could go, okay, right, somebody's listening.
Yeah.
There is help. There it's is support. There is whatever.
Yeah.
Because it is huge. Mm-hmm. You know, I've heard dads having their ribs broken by the kids and, you know, broken bones. All sorts of stuff, horrible stuff happening, and it's the trauma. And these parents keep loving these kids.
I know.
They keep loving them.
And, amazing.
And it's interesting because 18 months ago, three years ago actually, when we first started experiencing it, we were very quiet about it. We didn't discuss it. Didn't even talk to each other about it.
Really?
Yeah, because we just didn't want to acknowledge it as that thing. Yes. Because if we acknowledged it as a thing, we would feel failed and, you know, all that sort of stuff. Whereas now, I mean, tomorrow is the first time that I'm actually going to speak publicly about anything that's happened within our family. So I'm a little bit anxious about that because obviously, we probably should do some preparation. But pour me another glass tomorrow morning. I don't think that's scaring me. I think it's just the fact that, you know, it just needs to, you know, it is a thing. And you say that, a thing, it is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to get to a stage where we don't have to say it's a thing, though.
Yeah.
You know, because it's just there.
Mm.
And people accept it, people acknowledge it, we get the support that we need for it, whether it be from professionals or our peers or whoever it comes from. And that we don't feel that, you know, by the extreme examples that we've both given about, you know, maybe having to restrain our children, that we don't feel that we're opening ourselves up for a whole
barrage of abuse,
of abuse or you know
allegations
or stuff like that, because we don't do it for that reason. We do it to keep them safe. We do it to keep ourselves safe, and we do it to keep people around them safe.
Mm-hmm.
I know. Pause for breath there.
I think when I was sort of younger, I think we probably could all say this. I you know, we all knew people who adopted children, and they would say, "Oh, my neighbour, my friend adopted, my auntie adopted, whatever."
Mm.
And that child put them through hell, and it was terrible, and all of that. Yeah, that's awful. But then you live it, and you really start to understand it, and you just want now people to understand that it's not these terrible kids, it's just the trauma that they've had to endure, which makes them the way they are, and they need help.
Yeah.
You know, we need things in place that actually really can help these children to get through life, because, you know, they can't be seen as naughty children.
No, definitely.
You know, it's heartbreaking what they've had to face.
But what we also don't want to do is label them, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because we were talking about ADHD and ADHD earlier on. And, you know, they're both kind symptoms, conditions that they do have diagnoses, but we don't want to label them as, you know, parent beaters or, you know, however, whatever it is you say.
Yeah.
I think the interest, because this is us talking, but actually, could you imagine putting two kids who have those kind of feelings with a microphone between them to see what they'd say? Because over the weekend, I was quite offended by a blog that was written by an adoptee, not because it was all negative, but there's just a couple of things in it that I didn't like, because actually I feel as parents that we do our very, very best to be able to provide and look after and make sure they're successful as they can be and all that sort of stuff that goes with it. And we talk about the child's voice, and I stand behind a doctor's voice, but I also stand behind a child's voice. But actually, children find it very difficult to explain sometimes how they feel.
Yeah.
Now, you know, it's hard to get that information, to be able to say, how would you like me to deal with it? Mm-hmm. Because once that red mist phase or whatever you want to call it is gone, so have most of those feelings about how they felt at that point. So to get them to say, well, when I'm like that, can you do this or can you do that? You can't.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
And I think children, I think when I became a parent, I really realised that children's perceptions of events, even children within the spectrum of normal, their perception of events can be quite ropey. I mean, children are really astute.
Mm.
But when I've talked to my children and said, oh, do you remember when we did this? And I'll go, yeah, and we did this, and we did this. And I'll go, no, those are three, you've amalgamated four different events into one day out.
Yeah.
Go, no, that you were three then, and you were six then. And they go, oh, was I? And they'll argue the toss with me. So I think that challenges their perception.
Yeah.
You have to question their perception. But then again, you know, this is a bigger topic.
Social
work is we're trained to listen to children and to believe children. We should believe children. But we need to weigh, and I think that's one of the reasons I think the police are so helpful in relation to this, is that their training is you weigh the voice.
Yeah.
You weigh the voice of this person against this person.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they saying that? Why are they saying that? And I think that's why the police are often very helpful, because the social workers are very much, we're trained to listen to the voice of the child. The voice of the child is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we're on to a huge different topic.
That's my fault.
It is really interesting. I think that even when we had the podcast in the third podcast, which was Helen Bonnick, which was fantastic and kind of really
opened all up.
Opened an awful lot up. And but even since then, the knowledge through Dr. Wendy, and the survey that I put out, actually our knowledge has developed tenfold.
Yeah.
You know,
it's not even a year ago.
Well, it's not. It's 8-9 months ago. And we're now understanding about the ages when people are saying, actually, it's predominantly that middle childhood section, sort of 7 through to 11. So our knowledge of this is evolving. And I'm kind of, I probably shouldn't say, but I'm trying to kind of push the DfE to do some proper research, not like the stuff I did on the back of the fag packet. Academic research, and to kind of get some meat on this bone. Because actually, once we've got meat on the bone, we can use it to twist the arm. Well, I can say whack, but I thought it was inappropriate because we're talking about childhood violence.
And you've just,
And to coerce. I'll not cut that out.
Yeah.
To coerce people about that. So I think there's lots of stuff going on that I'm really looking to talk about in that people that were persuadable and there's stuff moving, and hopefully that will come out over the next few months. And that's been, I feel like we've had a really productive conversation.
How long have we gone on for?
We've gone on for literally 45 minutes.
Oh, that's not too bad.
No.
It's enough.
I mean, we could keep going.
Well, we could. We could. Yeah.
I know. And another thing.
And then we can watch the planes go by the window of where we're sat in our little studio here. The BBC studio.
Tell you what we should do for this. We'll take a selfie on that chair.
Yeah, we should.
And we'll use it as the cover for this podcast. That's excellent.
And just to go back then to the podcast, because I know you're saying 45 minutes, but we put these out an hour, intros and everything. So, you know, we've got another 15
like,
minutes.
Right? Like a full dog walk, isn't it?
no names mentioned. just in general, the podcast, because, you know, meeting Paula tonight or today has been fantastic because
I think so, I speak
to Tris. Yeah, I know. Well, you are punching above your weight. Yeah, you might want to sort yourself out.
Have a decent
haircut and a shave on again. You know.
I throw out the aftershave.
An old spice. And it's interesting because I speak to Tris about the podcast and I get the, you know, that's good.
Whatever.
You know, I heard you recording it, so it's nothing new kind of thing. You know?
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting to hear what Paula saw as well. About the fact that the topics have been interesting, and what you were saying earlier about maybe doing micro topics, and I'm not sure. How do we take it forward?
Yeah.
How do we improve? How do we develop?
Yes, develop.
Develop.
We cannot, you know, if we want things to remain as good as they are, things will have to change.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm a lover of change.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, Paula, when are you joining me for my next podcast without Al?
Yes. Yeah.
And I'd love to see how that technically works.
Well, we'll have a bottle of Prosecco. Yeah. We'll have two glasses.
Yeah.
And we'll just go, right, it's a recorder.
Yeah, on a wax cylinder. And you'll post it out to people.
Yeah.
It's all right. I have friends.
It'll be on parchment.
Oh, you too.
I have people that could just
feel. Sorry, we're putting a PIF bid for the DfE for this podcast. No, I'm joking. I can't say that. You have to edit that.
I don't even know what that means.
Oh, that's good then. So that's not true. So you've not done it.
Well, I think, shall we call that a day then?
Hmm.
Anything else you want to say, Paula?
Are we finishing for the summer on this one, or are we doing another?
I don't know. We did talk about having a little summer break.
Well, because I know we joked about, like, you know, episode 20, that was it, didn't we?
Yeah.
But actually, I think...
Do people want a summer break? That's the... I'm bored with
you. Oh, we've just engaged with the audience. Paula's just...
Me and Tristan.
Uncharted territory.
Yeah, we are, aren't we? Yeah.
No.
So anyway, if you want us to have a break, then call Paula on...
I think it's really good to do it and have it. And if people want to listen, they can listen. If they don't, they don't. If they don't get time, like...
See how that works.
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
So when we're talking about time, is it the length of them, or is it just the fact you don't have time?
Well, I don't know how to use sort of electrical equipment.
I've just got visions of your house being unhoovered, washing everywhere.
I would like to listen to them. But yes, time is a huge thing. So I need to slot it into things where I have got time.
Like a holiday. Or
a holiday. Which he doesn't like doing.
Yeah.
But I've now got this new car that apparently you can plug your thing into so you can hear podcasts.
Okay.
So if I learn how to do it,
you could listen.
I can go on journeys and listen.
I'll make it happen so you can listen.
Well, I mean, I don't want to go as far as to say a survey, but I think that actually, you know, people who do listen should give us their feedback on whether they want us to have a little break over the summer or not.
Yeah, I'll maybe
and we'll leave out to them.
Tweets like if you want us to have a break.
Yeah. If you're fed up of us.
Just like.
Yeah.
Exactly. Or something like that. We can use some sort of jiggery poker.
Because I do think that we do need a break now and again.
It's always about people wanting hope, isn't it?
Yeah, well, exactly, yeah. And I don't think that we would take a proper break from it because obviously we'll still be doing stuff over the summer and we'll still probably fill in. We'll get ahead of ourselves actually for next year.
Yeah.
Because I think that we've nearly done a full year of these.
The thing is though, Scott, if he's not doing this, he'll have to look after the kids, so.
True.
So we're not having something and on that note. Well, it's been lovely to meet you both. You've been lovely.
Meet me.
No.
That happened to me. many years ago.
Yeah. It's lovely to have a break away, isn't it?
It's wonderful. Lovely to meet Scott.
Yeah,
I've gate crashed your night away.
I know. I don't know how they got three beds in a room. Otherwise,
we'll have complaints.
Well, that was. Did you see how there was slight confusion over the fact that someone thought we were married?
Yes, I'm not going to say who it was, but somebody said, "Oh, don't worry, I've spoken to your husband, Al," and I went, "No, partner, Al. Sorry, partner, Al." And I was thinking, "Okay, do they mean podcast?"
We don't believe in gay marriage, do we?
No, we don't. Oh, you've gone there. And I was like, "Podcast partner?" Or, and I said, I addressed it and I just said, "You know that Al's not my husband.
Just friends.
Yeah. Well,
we are just." We tolerate each other. Well, I think on that note, we can categorically confirm that I am married in a legal sense to Paula.
Yeah.
And you are not married to me in any sense.
And I'm in a civil partnership with my...
You can say his name.
Well, yeah, no, can Tristan, you? But he's not my husband because we're not married.
And that's fine.
He's just my civil partner.
That's your choice.
It's a bit rubbish.
We're slipping into...
Three kids in and... Still not married.
Don't make an honest man of him. Well, it
could be a bridesmaid.
I look have to shave his beard off.
See, that sort of prejudice that is undermining progressive society, isn't it?
Before we go, I'd like to say good luck editing this.
I'm not going to edit it. It's going out exactly as it is. And on that note, thank you very much, Paula. Thank you very much, Scott.
Thank you, Al.
Have a good look after yourselves.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.